Welcome to Success Redefined with Dr. Toni Warner. I'm Dr. Toni, mom of five, psychotherapist, author, and mentor. Here, you're going to find insightful discussions spanning science, psychology, and soul as the personal and professional meet, and we explore the intersection of what really matters so success can be redefined with connection, healing, and fulfillment in mind. In this episode, we're going to be exploring the overarching theme of sensuality, sexuality, and partnership. And I'm joined by Rachel Burleson to have a candid, open, honest conversation around how we redefine success as high-achieving women, as a perfectionistic type of woman, as someone who is navigating either challenges in marriages or is navigating life post-divorce, and how our sensuality, our sense of self plays a role in all of that. It's a really good conversation. Rachel Burleson describes herself as a long-time perfectionist. She's considered herself a people pleaser throughout her history and an all-around good girl herself, with a history of really prioritizing other people's needs, comforts, expectations, all above her own, which I'm sure many of us can relate to. And she's really open about her own struggles with things like meditation, navigating life post-divorce. And professionally, Rachel is a holistic and licensed professional counselor in the East Dallas area with a passion for helping high-performing, neurodivergent women let go of their perfectionism, over-functioning, and performing in order to embrace their authentic self using things like mindfulness and movement. She incorporates dance, yoga, walk, talk, therapy, and so much more, helping her clients really integrate the mind, the body, and the spirit on their path to healing and growth. She's a certified personal trainer with the National Council for Strength and Fitness, and she's a 200-hour registered yoga teacher, a pole and exotic dance instructor, a mother, and a partner. She's got four huskies with her partner currently, and she enjoys doing things like cooking nutritious food and seeing live music and so on and so forth. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Let's hop on in. We're going to be diving into relationships and the interplay of self-sensuality post-divorce while also healing in our own trauma as professional perfectionistic type women, which is a mouthful, right?
Yep.
There's like so many levels. But it is something I think that is in many ways taboo to talk about. And yet so many women are navigating some aspect of this. So I really just want to express my appreciation that you're willing to come here and be with us and share with us so generously and so courageously. Here's my experience, and I'm going to ask you yours, and I think that's a good place to start. I have found personally and professionally that there are a lot of achieving women. So women who are driven, they're ambitious, they, you know, professionally want to do well, and they tend to equate success with like what success is with over-functioning, overdoing, over-giving in some way, some variation of that. I know for me, being really strong, right? Like being strong, mentally strong, emotionally strong, like coming across as strong and highly independent was one way for me to portray success. And it was one way for me to feel safe too, right? But it also cut me off from being really present, being able to like enjoy the life that I was creating, and also just from getting vulnerable, like from getting real vulnerable in my intimate relationships. And so I wonder if you took a step back in time before this current version of yourself who has navigated so much and has been redefining success for herself in so many ways, if you took a step back in time How would you say that as a high achieving married woman and professional, you define success at that point for yourself?
You know, I feel like there's an unwritten script for us, for women. Listen, I'm sure men do, but for women, I feel like there is this unwritten script. And within that comes this hyper feminine, I don't know, expectations and ideals as a wife, as a mother. And then also you can be anything you want. And so this like hyper independence, and they're kind of at odds against each other. So I think navigating that, you know, to define success back then was trying to do it all. I was trying to be the perfect mother, the perfect wife, whatever that meant. I was, and I did it. I did a lot of it. I had a career. I was continuing my education. I got my master's degree while I was finishing my master. I was about halfway done when my son was born, and working full time, and then trying to be a full time mother, because you know I didn't want to be a part time mother. There's that whole stigma as well. And it just, yeah, I think it was trying, it was over-functioning. And I didn't realize how much I was over-functioning until years and years later. I mean, you talk about, yeah, gets burning the candle at both ends. And I mean, mine finally, you know, burned out almost. I mean, sort of. I don't know where it went, but I couldn't do it anymore. It was unsustainable.
That is such a common story that it's like we don't want to diminish our experience because it's so prevalent and painful. And yet it's so common. So common, because I can relate to that in so many ways myself. I mean, by the time I was 30, I had had my third baby, earned my PhD, had been a licensed clinical social worker for many years at that point. We got a puppy. I owned my home. I owned my car, blah, blah, blah. Like I could keep going on, right? But like I did all the things and I was not fulfilled. I wasn't burnt out at that time. I had been to burnout twice prior to that, but I wasn't fulfilled. Like I wasn't like, joyous. Yes. Like I wasn't, you know, what? How did this sneak in? How did this definition of how we are supposed to be successful, right? Successful women who are achieving at home and in the workplace. Like, how did this definition sneak up without our knowing? Do you know,
I think it's so common. And there's two things that always strike me. Number one is we get behaviorally, we are rewarded for this. Everybody looks at us and they are like, oh my God, how do you do it all? And I used to joke and I'm like, oh, it's crack. And then I realized it's probably undiagnosed ADHD. Then I thought maybe it's anxiety. But we are rewarded for it because the more people say, how do you do it all? And you're like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I was working three jobs. Well, this is a little post-divorce, working three jobs. All the things I love to do. And serving people, I loved to serve, you know, in serving in that capacity. But you get behaviorally rewarded. And then I think, you know, chemically we get rewarded. We check our things, everything off. We get the dopamine hits for crossing things off our to-do list. We get a little bit of an endorphin rush. We're probably on some sort of cortisol cycle as well that fuels it. It's just crazy. But I think, you know, we get rewarded. And so I think it also keeps us in that cycle and in that loop. And the other thing, like you were saying, when, you know, that feeling of being unfulfilled, I always think of Madagascar, the original Madagascar, when the penguins, you know, the entire movie is getting the penguins to Antarctica. And the scene is so perfect because they're sitting there on the iceberg and they finally get to Antarctica and it's like this long, awkward silence. And finally someone goes, well, it sucks, you know? And it always reminds me of that. Like we do everything we want to. And of course, we're proud of our accomplishments and the life that we have built. And yet there's still kind of that moment of like, I mean, it doesn't suck, but it kind of sucked. You know, it wasn't, it's not exactly what we thought it was going to be.
I think sometimes, like, because you said, you know, like your wick was gone, right? Like you had burnt out. I think us, especially us women who define success as this over-functioning, hyper-independent type of definition, like it has to suck. It has to suck really bad before we're willing to say no, right? Like before we're willing to say, actually, maybe I can't do it all. Maybe I don't have to do it all. And I mean, I didn't realize it at all. Of course, at the time I was in denial, but I really felt like I had something to prove. And I really wanted to feel wanted. And there was a reward feedback loop for me of, you know, maybe if they don't understand me and I don't fit in anyway, if I could just do things for people, right? Or if I could just be there for people in a way no one else will be, or if I could show people I could offer them value in some way, then there is that temporary reward of, oh, I feel a connection, and we all want to feel a connection, right? But it doesn't, at some point, it doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. And then what I found for me was I had to redefine success. It had to be different. I'm like, this just doesn't make sense for me anymore. It doesn't fit. Like you said, it's like at odds. What success is as a mom is at odds with what success is as a professional woman, is at odds of what success is as like this devoted wife and this, you know, faith-based woman. And like, oh, I'm like, this is driving me to, and I don't use this word lightly, it was driving me insane. I was confused, which was not something I was very comfortable feeling. I liked kind of knowing, right? Like what was going on. And I'm curious for you, if there's a time or an experience that really stuck out for you when you came to that point and you were like, that definition of success is not working anymore. Either I can't or I don't have to do it all. And you were like, this is a catalyst for change. Like this, something has to change. Like, is there a time or an experience or something that really pops up for you when that became so clear?
There's been a couple. My divorce, definitely, what led to my divorce was definitely one of those big pivotal moments. Just trying and trying to, I'm not a failure. You know, I don't define myself. I am, you know, I will continue to persevere. I'm not a quitter. Maybe that's a better word for it. I'm not a quitter. I don't like to give up. I don't like to have something. It kind of ties into the perfectionism. I don't like things to fail. And so I stayed in a marriage that with a person who he brought everything he could to the table, but it was not what I needed. It was not. And I kept just trying to fill in whatever gaps there were. And it always reminds me, it's like I didn't have the capacity anymore. My cup was, my capacity, you know, I have this, I always picture it as like a 2-cup measuring cup, you know, and it was all the way to the top. And there was one moment where he just put one more drop in and I was like, I can't do this. This is not sustainable. And that was very hard because it was no longer just myself. It was my child. It was my marriage. It was giving up a lot of, in some ways, I mean, really reflecting on it back. I mean, there was a perfectionist. God, I'm getting emotional over this. There was a, like, the perfectionist in me was like, oh my God, like, I got to give it up. So
pulling on that part that's like, no, I'm not, like you said, like, I'm not a failure. I can't be a failure. I can't give up. I can't quit. Yeah. Like, I have to keep over functioning to give everything that I have, or I am a failure. I am a quitter. I am giving up. And it's like, it's logically, I think we know that that's not true, but I think emotion is coming up for you, and I can feel it too. And I'm sure other women listening in can too, because it's emotional. It's an emotional connection we have.
I think it's very deeply rooted into our identity, into that identity of, I can do anything. I mean, society's told us, our families have told us, especially as little girls, you can do anything you want to do. But you also need to be a mother, and you also need to be a good wife, and you also need to do this, and you also need to do that. So I'm like, okay, and I'm doing it. But I always think it's like spinning plates. You can't keep all the plates spinning all the time. And it's frustrating. And I would say it took a decade for me to even realize what I was going through, because even at that time, I'm like, okay, I can't do that anymore. So I've got to let that go. And there was a certain amount of empowerment. I mean, there was also some reflection on, it was an emotionally abusive relationship. There was a lot, but you know, you kind of get in survival mode, I think, then. And it's like, let me plow forward now as in this new part of my life. And I was not receiving any kind of financial support. I mean, my ex-husband wound up leaving the state. And so, I mean, I was a full-time mother, no financial support, no nothing, no, you know, it was just me and my son. That was it. And my dog. And two houses. And, you know, it was a lot. So.
And I'm hesitant to say the cliche, but it's like, it does get harder before it gets better. And I know I've experienced that time and time again in various ways for various reasons. But also, you know, folks that I've supported have experienced that catalyst moment when we're like, something's got to change. What I thought success was did not leave me feeling successful. Clearly. And so something has to change, but that shift in between is challenging. It's hard. It's gut-wrenching. And I believe is when we can either shut down more, right? Kind of hunker down in our defenses more, or in our unhealthy coping mechanisms more, or choose to begin a different healing process. And I'm curious if that was part of your experience.
Yeah, both. Yes. There was a little bit of both. I look in certain arenas of my life where I hunkered down, and that armor was thick. And I'm learning to take that off now. And that's more an intimate, which is very interesting, which is an intimate relationship. However, there was, you know, it's probably very cliche, but after my divorce, I started running. I was a dancer for all throughout school, middle school, high school. I was jolting co-captain. I belly danced. I did all sorts of fun stuff. And I had always off and on been a gym rat. And so part of my, I think, like, reclamation of myself was really in my own fitness journey and wellness journey in that way. That was very healing. I started running after the divorce. Mm-hmm. Actually, I started running right before. I was probably, my ex-husband put together like a little iPad, a little iPod, not a shuffle, but whatever the little tiny ones were. And I started running, and I was never a runner. As a dancer, as a walker, I worked out, I swam. I mean, I did things, but I was not a runner. And I, at 36, started running. And I was like, if I could do this, I could do anything. If I could run 30 minutes or 3 miles or, you know, I could do anything. And that probably, I probably started running in May. And by August, I was like, okay, I'm done. We're not, you know, I got to get out of this. I don't think he understood the connection. But anyway, I went on to, you know, really start training for half marathons, marathons, and really started that. And that whole idea of we are stronger than we think, that was one of those things I think, you know, running and fitness was so healing and I could do anything. And yeah, around that time I started dancing again. I accidentally, we took a girlfriend to, for her birthday, we took a girlfriend to a pole dance class. And all of a sudden, my first thought, I've been in education for 26 years. I was a classroom teacher for 5 and then a school counselor for 12. I still am a program coordinator, as well as having a private practice on the side. But, you know, as the educator in me, the teacher in me is like, once I do something, I'm like, oh, I want to teach that. And so I took my first pole dance class. And number one, I missed my calling as a stripper. And number two, the wrong field. And number two, I was like, oh, this is it.
I love that you're bringing in. When we were going back and forth before this recording, before we recorded this podcast episode together, you shared this, the power of mindfulness and movement, and that was so integral to your healing process. And isn't it so interesting how, like, when we give ourselves permission to stop over-functioning as much, it makes space for things that we enjoy. Like, it makes space for us to explore ourselves and our sensuality, our sexuality. And I think there is sometimes like a taboo around women talking about sensuality and sexuality within just themselves. And I'm curious if you could share some of what that meant for you and what that looked like for you, because it sounds to me like it was a really important part, not just of your healing, but then also part of you redefining success, right?
For Absolutely. Yourself. You know, one of the things that struck me, and this was, I taught for about 10 years. I still do some workshops now and again, but I taught pole. Just to clarify that. It was interesting as I started teaching, as I started dancing myself, and then it's also tied in. It's funny, like all of this is so tied in together. The mindfulness piece of it, yoga has also been a big journey of it, running, you know, just these kind of testing the limits of our physical boundaries. But then I think it ties into other things, like you had mentioned, our sensuality, these things that are taboo, testing the limits of, I don't know, the constructs that we've been sold, you know, the rules that we've been told to abide by. And so as I started to dance and teach and work with this community, mainly of women, and we had all sorts of folks in there, but, you know, really seeing women, I realized one of the things I realized is that as women, we are socialized to give and to give and to give. And I know I gave and gave. And I think we start to lose touch with the power of our femininity, the power of our sensuality, because, as you know, we're wiping counters and noses and we're going to work and we're getting groceries and, you know, we're taking care of the dog and we're, you know, I have huskies, I have dog hair everywhere. You know, I'm vacuuming 4 times a day and, you know, and being a perfectionist doesn't help when you're trying to keep your house clean and right. And everybody looking good and fed and all this stuff. And we just lose it. You know, we lose touch with our femininity and that power, the power of our femininity, of our sensuality, of our sexuality. And then, you know, heaven forbid we talk about that. You know, we can't talk about the fact that, I don't know, our bodies, women's sexuality and bodies are exploited. You know, we're selling products. We're, you know, it's just, we're shown all these things of what it means to be a woman as little girls. And so we're like, okay, do we do that? But we're not supposed to really put out. We're not supposed to give in to our sexual desires. You know, we're supposed to be good girls. So, like, what is it? You know, how do we integrate all of that? How do we be the good girl? And how do we find that power? What do we do with the power? And that's not even to speak if there's been any kind of sexual trauma or anything happening as children, you know, that's just, or as anywhere, I really, throughout our lifespan, you know, as children, as young adults, as teens.
Absolutely. How would you say, could you walk us through a little bit of your experience of what it looked like for you to incorporate this, the mindfulness, the movement into your healing journey, how it really helped you move through the transitions you were going through and the internal thought processes that were changing for you or being challenged for you? Like, how did you use mindfulness and this movement through dance to help yourself?
It's interesting. The first thing that pops into my mind when I start teaching, I came from a dance background. I was, you know, drill team. So we were, I always call us 5, 6, 7, 8ers. You know, you've got the 5, 6, 7, 8ers. Anybody who did any kind of formal dance and choreography and performance, we are 5, 6, 7, 8ers. They're in the type of movement, pole and exotic or erotic dance, it is really more about flowing. And it's very hard to get out of that. And it kind of ties into the perfectionist, the over-functioning. Is our hand supposed to be like this or is it supposed to be like that? You know, there is all these, it's just like, let it go and start to actually move. I would see, I saw it all the time in myself, but I would watch other women. They would start to do, it's awkward. You feel stupid doing it at first. But all of a sudden you catch yourself, you like do something. You're like, oh, I look good. And oh, that's me. And then like you try it again and you're like, and so there is this connection and getting a little bit out of your mind and out of the rules about what is supposed to be, what we are supposed to be, what we're supposed to look like, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to act and behave. And you can just get into this, I don't know, this movement. You can get into, tap into something that is beyond all of that rules. And so the mindfulness, yeah, that mindfulness piece of it, it's funny, you know, even at the time, mindfulness has become so much more. I mean, this has been, gosh, a 15-year journey. And so in the beginning, sometimes it's more of just like, oh, I can do that. And then there's this deeper sense of like, oh, this is me. This is a little bit more. I don't know if that makes sense. It.
The way I'm conceptualizing it as you're talking is like there's this release of the shame and the shoulds that happens when you allow yourself the space to flow and to freely express simply for the sake of flowing and freely expressing, which is, it's like this stark contrast from the rigid cage of overfunctioning where we have to please, appease, prove, right? Like all of those things. And it's like,
yep.
That's what I was imagining as you're talking, right? You're just like moving and dancing. And it was just like, there's a release that was allowed to happen. And I'm sure it was many releases, not just one, but you know, like an allowance to just let go a little bit with our body, with our emotions, like with our full self, not just saying it, oh yeah, you know, I forgave or I let go or I really, like, not just using words, but like feeling it and embodying it.
Yeah.
Is that's like, that's the imagery I got and the feeling I got while you're talking.
Absolutely.
Does that fit?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would have people often, people in class, we would do performances for graduations and showcases at the dance studio. And people were like, oh my gosh, I bet your husband or your boyfriend loves this. And I never wanted to say, because I'm like, listen, if you're like going to take this home and bust this out on your partner, knock yourself out. But this is not for my partner. This is 100% for me. This is just my space.
And that's okay. And that's enough. And that's more than enough. And embracing that and letting that just envelop us as women, I think, is so powerful. And not that there's anything wrong. If like you said, if you want to, you know, take these moves and the flow, if you want to take that home and it feels good to you and it feels good to them, like, go for it. Right. And also, it can just be for you. And that's okay too. There's nothing wrong with that. And just giving ourselves permission. That's okay.
And the shame, it's very interesting that you said that. That really struck a chord with me. Because it's really within my therapeutic work, that is a big, you know, to me, that is just a, that's such an important piece. And, you know, to acknowledge where our shame hides, how it, you know, how it comes up, our narrative, those, like Brené Brown likes to say, the shame gremlins or the tapes, you know, that we play. And yet, I don't think I was very connected to that. There was a little bit of a resistance. I'm like, I don't have shame, you know, because as a confident, you know, self-esteem and confidence have nothing to do with your shame, you know, your narrative or your shame triggers. And, you know, there was this big piece of proving and performing and producing that, you know, was kind of wrapped up in all of it. And I would say over the years, there is, I don't know, it was never really there in Dan. It really wasn't. There was, but I couldn't name it, if that makes sense. I couldn't name it. I think because I couldn't admit that there was shame. Now I'm like, oh yeah, there's shame. There it is. That's the shame gremlins. There they pop up. You know, I mean, that's the whole reason that we're doing that. I mean, it's all just trying to prove our worth.
Yeah, it can be so hard to put words to the experience that is happening internally as all of this shifting and healing and redefining is occurring, because we're going through so much mentally, emotionally, physically. There's just so much happening. I don't really believe it's possible to be 100% aware of all that's happening inside of us all the time. You know, it's just not possible, which is the benefit of our reflections, if we're, you know, willing and able to take them. Gosh, it's just so, it's so powerful. And
well, it's also, sorry, I didn't.
No, go ahead.
It's not a linear path either. I think that's another thing, is that it's just not a linear path. And so these different things, like you were saying, they pop up and you're like, oh, I didn't see. But within that, there is this, what I think movement, what dance, yoga, the mindfulness piece of it was that I am so much, it goes back to that, I am just so much stronger than I realize. I can do these things. I can get up and dance in front of a group of people and put my, you know, let others see me. Yeah, it's just, it's very, that showing up and being seen is very difficult. It's difficult for me.
Would you say that your definition of strength, of your perception of how you're strong, did that change? Because what came up for me as you were just saying that, you know, one of the ways I guarded myself, I armored myself, I set myself up to look successful was to appear strong, right? Like I have it all together. I don't have any needs. Don't worry about me. I'm not going to be a burden, right? But the strength, the inner strength that I have now, how I define strength also had to be redefined as I redefine success, because I do feel a different strength that I don't have to be guarded and armored all of the time. And when I do, I can really feel it. I can really, really feel it now. It's very noticeable to me when that comes up. Much more noticeable to me than it was before. It's like the strength now that ties into success for me embraces vulnerability, whereas before it rejected it. Does that make
absolutely
sense?
And I'm trying to put that into so many different kind of perspectives, because you know, I don't think I'm an anomaly. I'm definitely a performer. In many ways, you know, I mean, just we competed, I performed, I danced, I, you know, been on stage. I love that piece of it. So I am a natural performer, but on a deeper sense, I am a performer. And that absolutely is part of my armor that guard my vulnerability and that ability to show up and really be seen for who you truly are, as opposed to, I don't know if that's kind of what you're talking about, but it's really what struck me. And so the strength in that, again, it's this weird thing of like, we can see our strength as our confidence, our tenacity, our determination, our successes. And yet there is something in putting all that down and, yeah, being our vulnerable, authentic self. And I'm, you know, I feel like at 50, I'm still discovering who that is and what that means. You know, those habits.
It's a lifelong. I do think it's a lifelong journey, because we're always experiencing different things and we have the opportunity to learn and grow in different ways. So it's just always evolving. But you were talking about, you know, I'm a performer, right? Like the different performances, and I wonder if this verbiage works. So this performing for pleasure versus performing for protection, and noticing how that sits differently in our bodies, like noticing, you know, am I performing in this way? So am I showing up in this way because it feels good, because it invokes confidence and invites vulnerability, because I know who I am and I know I can hit, right? Like there's this sense of strength in that performance for pleasure, but there's also a vulnerability because there's an openness to it. And when we're open, there's a vulnerability to it. But because we feel that strength, it's okay. There's a sense of it's okay versus performing to protect ourselves. It's that armory. It's heavy. It's like, that's how it feels in my body as I'm talking about it. Like it's heavy to me. It feels closed off, disconnected, right? So it's a different kind of performance. Does that fit with what you were kind of describing?
Absolutely.
There?
And it's, again, it's so nuanced. And I think it's part of the journey, because I can look back and see. And that's what I'm saying before. I feel like this is still a work in progress, where I'm starting to drop the performance when it comes to more intimate relationships. That's my final frontier. I've like, you know, kind of killed it at all these other things, but not so much that. But there is that is that very guarded. And it's interesting too. It's like I can drop the armor in dance. I can drop the armor in moving for myself. But it is a little harder to drop that with a partner. It is a little bit harder, you know, of what is expected of me. What's expected of me as a woman? What's expected of me as a partner, as a lover, as a, you know, anything in our life, as a mother? It, you know, it's easy to put on the performance. It's harder to be a little messy and imperfect and embrace it. And honestly, dance, that's what it is, because sometimes dance, you just feel, sometimes you feel so awkward in your movement. We kind of structure our classes, you know, like a, I always think of a pyramid, but at the base of the pyramid, you're just kind of doing things and it looks awkward and it feels awkward. You're like, am I doing it right? You're making weird faces and your hands are kind of, you know, kind of stressed and feet are, toes are pointing in all different directions. And then after you kind of, that muscle memory is set in and you get a little bit comfortable with the movement, then you can start lifting your chest, extending your arms. You know, you could start like getting a little bit more into like, oh, okay. And then at the very, very top of the pyramid is we can really add your own authentic expression. And for everybody, that's going to look a little bit different. So we always talk about that when we teach dance. And I think that there's a lot of parallels in our own, I think, healing journeys, that in the beginning, especially as we're starting to put the armor down and learn new habits, new behaviors, new, you know, it feels weird. It's awkward, you know, and then we can practice it a little bit more and grow. And then, you know, finally, yeah, we get our little bit more of that authentic expression.
I agree, because it's not like, oh, we've got it figured out. And so then everything in our life is figured out. You know, we've just got it figured out across the board. It's all, that's not how it works. I completely agree that it's not linear as well. So I'm glad you said that, because there are different things that we're going to have happen in our lives that are unexpected, that are uncertain, that are certainly going to pull up our human parts of a fear. Right. Or that kind of awkward feeling, like you said, right? Because it's just different. It's foreign. It's unknown. And so even if there's not a fear there, there's still something different. There's still something, some adjustment happening. And I think a really big difference here is, you know, if for dance, as you were just sharing about, I'm noticing that it feels awkward, but I'm allowing some grace for myself. Like, it's okay that it feels awkward, versus what we can sometimes do, especially if we're in over-functioning mode, is, oh, that felt awkward, and then start shaming or blaming or otherwise, you know, poking at ourselves. Or sometimes someone could get explosive and it goes out on someone else. But what we do with it when we notice the awkwardness, when we notice the challenge, what we do with that makes such a big difference. And for me, that was part of me needing to redefine success as well, was there's some flexibility, there's some grace, there's openness to imperfection and to messing up and to not needing to be, you know, right and put together all the time. Like, there's, I can be open to that and it can be okay. And actually, I think I can feel safe in some places with some people in doing some of these things, and just kind of getting experience with that a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Does that connect with your experience?
And as you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, I've gotten really comfortable with being awkward and uncomfortable. And I kind of forget that part of the journey sometimes. I don't, when I'm teaching, when I'm watching people be exceptionally vulnerable, when you have quiet, shy person in class who is just like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I always had a portion of class that was the skills with a Z portion of, because I'm like, we're just going to try stuff and we might all suck at it. You know, I saw this on a video. We're just going to try it. you know, or it could be, I do it. I teach a HIIT class now. And so we'll just do crazy stuff on, you know, I'm like, okay, we're just going to practice that. And I have people who can do things in class that I can't. I'm like, okay, here's my version of it. And I don't mind being the supposed expert up there who can't do what other people can do. And I don't mind admitting that and saying, yeah, I mean, let's keep working on this stuff, you know? And the only way we get better at it is to keep practicing it.
Yes.
So, but yeah, that awkwardness, I think that there is something really nice about having spaces to be awkward. And especially when you're supposed to have it all together everywhere else, it's okay.
There's something about having those spaces to be awkward. That's such a, we want to quote that one, right? I think that's one that we want to remember, especially us women that are tuning in and can resonate with a lot of what we're talking about in this conversation. Have a place, a space where you can express yourself fully and embrace the awkwardness. It is such a treasure, such a gift. And also, I think, an essential part of healing, because it's a place, it's a space where we can be safe and vulnerable at the same time and have that connection. And so it's just very different than the pressure of needing to overfunction all of the time. So at the beginning of this conversation today, Rachel, I asked you to kind of take a few steps back in time, rewind time a little bit and share some of that experience with us. But we're going to fast forward now to today, to where we're at now. And I would like to ask you, with all your experience, personal and professional, even with, you know, this conversation that we have had together today, what would you say your current redefined definition of success is now?
Oh, good question. I would definitely say that's a really hard question. My redefine, because again, I just feel like I'm stumbling through all this. I think it definitely has to do, it kind of goes back to the being awkward. It's leaning into the uncomfortable, the new, the challenges of doing something new. What is successful to me, you know, with this January 4th. So, you know, New Year's, everybody's reflecting upon their successes of 2023 and looking toward what they're going to do. And I look back and 2022 for me was a huge year of growth. And I did a lot of things. And I always say that I'm high performing, over functioning. I'm high performing ADHD. I have high performing ADHD. So I can do a lot and I figured a lot, and overfunctioning has a big piece in that of keeping me on task and keeping me successful. But it is definitely, in saying that, I also have those ADHD tendencies and those perfectionistic tendencies and perhaps a little bit of a fixed mindset in certain areas that if I'm not good at it or I don't know how to do it, I'm going to not do it. So 2023, 2022 was a lot of growth, and 2023 was like catching my breath and doing a lot of nothing. And when I look back at it as an overfunctioner, as a perfectionist, I'm like, well, what did I do? Not a whole lot of anything. There is grace and compassion on myself, for myself, on like maybe needing to take that year to do very little and then to reflect and be like, well, that's not exactly what I want. That's not my vision. That's not aligned with my vision. That's not aligned with my values. Not in a way of beating myself up, but some data to kind of take in. And so I think redefining success now is understanding, again, it comes with that mindfulness of what is serving me, what is getting me closer to my goals, my vision, my values and what is moving me farther away. Looking at that in terms of systems of, you know, goal setting, not just like, you know, I'm a goal setter. So of course every year I'm going to be like, I'm going to lose 15 pounds. Well, I gained 10. I just want to get down, you know, but again, it's data points. It's not beating myself up, but they're data points in all of this, in this whole journey. And so what systems do I have to put into place that will serve me? What is going to create? I kind of hesitate to say balance because I don't think, you know, I think that that's part of the beauty of it is there is a little imbalance in all of this. Sometimes we lean into doing lots and sometimes we lean into doing little. And I don't know, kind of rambly, but, you know, it's
a hard. It is a hard one. I think it's one that most people don't think about, which is why we have this podcast, because now we can think about it now, right? Like now it can come more into our awareness for us to challenge ourselves and to ask ourselves and just to be curious about it. But you said things like grace and compassion. And you said, you know, in my words, but my interpretation of what you said is like to have some flexibility, but also some support, right? And both are important to have support, you know, have some boundaries and outline, but also have flexibility and flow within. And you talked about self-expression today. And so there's so many aspects to it. And they're all so different than rigid overfunctioning and overdoing and doing it all and getting all done, right? And so I think that is the important piece for us to bring forward today is let's just allowing ourselves to ask ourselves, how do I redefine success? How do I want to redefine success? Am I open to redefining success? I think is a movement, a shift in a direction that's healthier, that's more healing for so many of us. So I, for one, am very, very grateful that you allowed us to share this space, this energy, this time with you, and that you chose to share so much of yourself with us. Thank you so much. I want to ask if anybody's tuning in and they want to maybe connect to you or follow you, is there a place where someone could go to learn more about you or to follow you if you have social media or does any of that work for you?
I'm on Instagram, Burleson Counseling and Wellness, on Instagram, on Facebook as well, same as my website. So I would love to connect. This is my year of really trying to put myself out there and be seen with grace and compassion and less perfectionism. So I really appreciate this opportunity. This is a very important gift to give other women, other professionals, is this redefining success, because, you know, again, it speaks very strongly to me because we can fit ourselves into the boxes of what we're supposed to, but yeah, we have to, it's not sustainable.
It's not
so sustainable. We need the sustainable model.
Yeah. Thank you. It is. It's my honor to do this and really my passion to be able to do this. Thank you everyone who's joined us today, joining in on the recording. We're recording today on January 4th, as Rachel had shared a little bit earlier. So it'll be interesting when this episode launches later on in the year, in the spring, if you listen back, Rachel, to see if your definition of success had shifted even just between now and then, which it, you know, very well may have, who knows, but you know, that's more space for grace and evolution. So everyone who tuned in, thank you. If you're joining us on YouTube, I invite you to share your questions, reflections, contributions in the comment section below so we can continue to cultivate, to create a community that feels safe for all of us, where we can all can connect and contribute. Much, much success to each and every one of you. Until next time. Bye. Links related to this episode can be found in the show notes section. Want to submit questions about success, satisfaction, healing, and
relationships, health, or work, you can do that free and anonymous at drtonywarner.com, where you'll find other resources there as well. Did you benefit from this episode? You can subscribe, like, and share with another to pass it on, because anyone can listen on the go with this podcast audio available on all major podcasting platforms.